that we cannot divide our effort. I can think of no greater expression of defeatism.
That posed two problems for the administration. One, are the issues global? Two, is it defeatism to claim that we can't fight on two fronts? Secretary Marshall, in 5 days of testimony, offered his answers to both questions. He recalled that General MacArthur's testimony had made it very clear that global consequences had not been apparent to MacArthur, that MacArthur spoke as a theater commander. Is it defeatism to say we can't fight on two fronts? Secretary Marshall had a simple answer. We can't. We don't have what it takes. We're not prepared. And our allies are worse off than we are. But General MacArthur had insisted that in Korea it was essential to spread the area of attack, to remove the inhibitions on our Air Force.
Why, my soldiers asked of me, surrender military advantages to an enemy in the field? I could not answer. Some may say, to avoid spread of the conflict into an all-out war with China. Others, to avoid Soviet intervention. Neither explanation seems valid, for China is already engaging with the maximum power it can commit, and the Soviet will not necessarily mesh its actions with our moves.
The President's answer.
We have been urged to take measures which would spread the fighting in the Far East. We've been told that this would bring the Korean conflict to a speedy conclusion, that it would save the lives of our troops. In my judgment, that just isn't true. I believe we have a better chance of stopping aggression in Korea at a smaller cost in lives by following our present course.
Our present course or the MacArthur course? The general insisted that if we do not meet the threat in Korea, we are doomed. We are surrendering the situation to the communists in the Far East. Secretary Marshall was asked, isn't it more dangerous, more provocative of a Russian attack to send our troops to Europe? He answered, it was a risk. Send the troops or surrender the situation to the Soviets. Again, the senators turned to the Russians. If we bomb communist China, what will communist Russia do? General MacArthur said, the Russians cannot conduct a major offensive in the Far East. Their five divisions in Siberia are in a defensive posture. Their railroad from Eastern Europe is overworked. He thinks there is a certain degree of risk, but he does not believe the Russians would enter the war if we bombed China's bases.
It has been categorically stated that Russia will not come in if we bomb Manchuria. That statement was made to me about the Chinese not coming into Korea. And it was made on good authority, too, and I believed it.
General MacArthur was asked about this. He said his intelligence on the Far East was limited, but the Secretary of State and the Central Intelligence Agency had agreed that there was little chance of any major intervention in the Korean War by the Chinese. But Secretary Marshall does not agree with General MacArthur's intelligence on the Russians. Secretary Marshall says they have thousands of planes surrounding Korea in Vladivostok, Port Arthur, Dairen, Harbin. They have former Japanese troops on Sakhalin, just to the north of the northernmost Japanese island. They have a tremendous power of retaliation. The Joint Chiefs of Staff believe that if we adopt the MacArthur program, Russia might feel compelled to come to the aid of communist China. If Russia strikes in Asia, that means World War III. Then, what is to happen in Korea? How is the war to end?
Once war is forced upon us, there is no other alternative than to apply every available means to bring it to a swift end. War's very object is victory, not prolonged indecision. In war, there is no substitute for victory.
That was a statement the administration could not easily answer. But we, all of us, wanted an answer. The president offered his view.
The Chinese rulers are losing large numbers of their soldiers. As these losses increase, it will become clearer and clearer to them that aggression does not pay. They can have peace when they give up their aggression and stop the fighting. If we stick to our guns and continue to punish the aggressors, we can end the aggression in Korea and restore peace.
And Secretary Marshall spelled it out in his testimony. We must kill more Chinese, break their morale, destroy the trained fiber of their army. If we do this, we have the best chance of reaching a negotiatory basis. But he said, if the Russians give the Chinese help, while we cannot add to our troop strength, the Chinese cannot be driven out of Korea. Secretary Marshall explained what we have been doing for the past 5 years. We have been curbing aggression, meeting the red challenge, and helping our allies. We did it in Iran and Greece and Turkey. We did it in Trieste and Berlin, and now Korea. Month by month, year by year, we opposed the communists with courage and poise, with firmness, determination, and patience. The Secretary of Defense says that in Korea there can be no quick solution. The policy we are following now is just about the only policy we can follow. But is it? General MacArthur thinks otherwise.
I shall work with you in the discharge of our common responsibilities of citizenship to the end that American policy be based upon the thoughts and the needs and the aspirations of the American people, unyielding to undue and exaggerated political pressures from abroad.
The general defined those political pressures at the Senate hearings. He thought our allies carry too much weight in the common council for the contribution they have made to the common cause in Korea. He would like as many allies as possible. If the present United Nations troops should be withdrawn by their governments, it would not hurt the tactical situation. They are so few in number. But he said it would be tragic. Yet, the general thinks, if others cannot see where appeasement leads, cannot see that we are following that road in Asia, then we had better protect ourselves and go it alone. The president speaks.
If the United States were to widen the conflict, we might well have to go it alone. If we go it alone in Asia, we may destroy the unity of the free nations against aggression. Our European allies are nearer to Russia than we are. They are in far greater danger. If we act without regard to the danger that faces them, they may act without regard to the danger that we face. Going it alone brought the world to the disaster of World War II. We cannot go it alone in Asia and go it in company in Europe.
General MacArthur is all for fighting communism in Europe, just as he would fight it in Asia. But his major concern is still Korea. And constantly, since the Chinese entered the war, he has made it known that he wanted new instructions. That is, new powers to launch new attacks on the new enemy who created the new war. But this was to be his big disappointment.
However great the effort to distract attention from the main issues by introducing into public discussion extraneous and irrelevant matters, the fundamental question still remains the same. What is the policy for Korea?
The general has his policy. Blockade the Chinese. Bomb their bases. Put the pressure on them. Don't send a single American onto the mainland of China, but use the Chinese nationalists. And the Chinese Reds would crack, be forced to talk peace. But as things are today, and as they were on the day of his dismissal, he could ask again, what is the policy for Korea? The day the general was dismissed, the president offered his answer.
I want to be clear about our military objective. We are fighting to resist an outrageous aggression in Korea. We are trying to keep the Korean conflict from spreading to other areas. But at the same time, we must conduct our military activities so as to ensure the security of our forces. This is essential if they are to continue the fight until the enemy abandons this ruthless attempt to destroy the Republic of Korea. That is our military objective, to repel attack and to restore peace.
We have tried to present the major issues in this very serious debate. The major issues, but one. One that will be debated by the partisans and historians and the civilians for decades to come. Why was General MacArthur dismissed? In the Senate testimony, this question came up again and again. There were many answers. May I attempt to summarize the record to date? General MacArthur says, I don't know why I was recalled. I am completely uninformed. The president's reasons are not valid. I could not oppose policies I was not aware of. Any insinuation that in any way I ever failed to carry out instructions is unworthy and unwarranted. And the manner of my dismissal jeopardized the interests of the United States. I felt the responsibility to speak out. No more subordinate officer ever wore the uniform of the United States. To which another five-star general of equally great service to the country, the Secretary of Defense, General Marshall, replied. It was wholly unprecedented, the way MacArthur made public his displeasure with his government's policy. He violated my precepts and understanding as a soldier. When an officer takes a commission, he accepts certain inhibitions not shared by politicians, lawyers, or businessmen. It distresses me to speak this way about a brother officer. But General MacArthur, by his public statements, he never violated a military order, threatened collective action with our allies, gave our foreign policy two voices. General MacArthur forgot that sometimes a good press may be a very bad business. The busy little subway running underground between the Senate chamber and the Senate office building worked overtime, with heavy loads of senators commuting back and forth between the hearings in the caucus room and the Senate floor. Although there were many voices and much excitement, there were few yet willing to stand up and be counted on any issue other than that MacArthur is right or Truman is right. Senator John Sparkman, Democrat of Alabama, was one of the few Democrats to be specific.
Here are some of the things taken from the record as the general has told us. General MacArthur has said his knowledge of global problems is only that which is necessary for a theater commander. If the Russians should react to the proposed bombing of Manchuria by attacking us, General MacArthur has no proposals for the defense of America. He says, and I quote his words, "That doesn't happen to be my responsibility." General MacArthur doesn't know if we are increasing our armed forces fast enough or if they are big enough. He will accept the Joint Chiefs' professional opinions on this, if it is given without obligations or pressure. But he is not inclined to accept the Joint Chiefs' conclusion for a Far Eastern policy. That, he says, has to pass the bar of public opinion. General MacArthur also testified, "The Joint Chiefs will have to say when we are best prepared for war." He says he is not posing as an expert on world affairs. It is not within his responsibility to plan for a Russian atomic attack or sabotage. It seems to me that General MacArthur has not only made a brilliant case for his position, but he's also made a brilliant case against his position. Perhaps we should say that he has made a brilliant case for the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
Senator McCarthy, Republican of Wisconsin, left no doubt as to where he stood on the subject of General Marshall.
Apparently, Marshall and Acheson et al. Have decided that in order to keep Russia out, we can't let Communist China lose the Korean War. Secretary Marshall's testimony in regard to the Chinese Air Force being built up, our failure to conduct reconnaissance, the danger of their hitting our troops, would indicate to me beyond any doubt that we're preparing for another planned Pearl Harbor, which will be much, much bloodier than the last one. And as I've said, during any other period of history, during any other administration, I think that someone would hang for this treachery.
The Korean War was being debated in halls other and older than our Congress. In Britain, Aniron Bevan, leader of the extreme left wing of the Labour government, who 2 weeks ago walked out of the Attlee government because he thought that Britain, like America, was arming too fast for war, said this.
"The great difficulty about our American friends is that they are so big, so efficient, that when they start something, they rock everybody else."
In this strangest of all possible worlds and wars, it is indeed strange that the political opinions of the extreme left in the British government and the extreme right in Washington should be saying almost the same thing. Not on all matters, to be sure. But here are socialist Bevan and conservative Senator Robert Taft saying almost identical words on the subject of rearmament. First, Mr. Bevan, this week.
"I don't believe that the main weapon with which to fight Soviet communism is military. I believe it's social and political. You never keep it back by arms alone. In fact, I am convinced that if you try an arm on the present scale, that itself will produce the poverty that will make Soviet communism successful."
Last week in Washington, the senator from Ohio said,
"I don't believe the government can take one-third of the national product, even if you balance the budget, without inflation. It is an impossible situation. If you do that, you eliminate all freedom at home, the very thing you're trying to protect. You set up a garrison state, you defeat your own ends. As I say, you threaten the very production of the United States.